Before this episode begins, a quick announcement to thank our newest partner here on Feet First, Petzl. Guys, it's getting dark outside and quickly. The last few weeks, my post-work runs have been getting dimmer and dimmer. Before you know it, the clocks will go back and we will be entering the winter months. And as the dark evenings draw near, you might find yourself in the market for a new headlamp. If you want the best, then look no further than Petzl. Petzl have been at the forefront of hands-free lighting solutions for over 50 years. They are trusted by a roster of UK runners like Damien Hall, Kim Collison and Sabrina Vergy, as well as internationally renowned athletes like four-time UTMB champion Francois Dayen, one of my personal running heroes. They've lit the way for countless legendary trail running performances, and I'm super grateful to them for supporting the podcast. You can check out Petzl's range at the Centurion Ultra Running Store, another one of our partners here on Feet First. If something takes your fancy, then Petzl are kindly offering the first 20 people who purchase a headlamp using the code FEETFIRST10, a free Petzl buff, another vital bit of winter running kit, alongside, of course, the usual 10% off that code gets you. So don't let the dark win this winter. Head to the link in the show notes, check out the range, and access the inaccessible with Petzl. All right, on with the show. Hello and welcome to Feet First, a podcast focusing on the front of the pack in the UK trail and ultra scene. My name is Ed Scott, and in this episode, I'm bringing you a conversation with Joe Turner, fresh off the back of his course record-setting run at Chiltern Wonderland 50. This is Joe's second time on the podcast. He came on after winning the 100 Hills 50K at the start of the 2025 racing season. After that race, he went on to win a few regional 50Ks before running the South Downs Way 100, which ultimately he DNF'd at around the 100K mark, citing some nutritional issues, which we talk a bit about in this episode. He went on to come second at Race to the Stones behind Hugh Tibbs, who set a course record at that run. But I think it's fair to say that Joe spent a lot of the year hungry for redemption in his eyes, or at least a fighting chance at running a good race, which he did at Chiltern Wonderland, where he took 4 minutes off John Ellis's 2020 course record. Chiltern Wonderland is hosted by Centurion Running. It is a big 50-mile loop of the Chiltern Hills area of outstanding natural beauty, starting and finishing in the beautiful village of Goring and Streatley on the River Thames. It's quite a low-key event. It's not one of the big Centurion events like South Downs Way 100, but it does have a really loyal following. And I ran it myself 4 years ago, it would have been now. And it's a really beautiful course. And I wanted to cover it because, as well as Joe being a great athlete, and I think we can call him a friend of the show at this point, I want to make sure I'm covering all kinds of races here in the UK. The last few episodes have been focused on some pretty big iconic races, obviously the World Trail Championships, but also the Dragon's Back, the Tour de Gion. And I wanted to make sure that I don't lose sight of those more regional, local races that, to be honest, are much more accessible for probably a lot of the people who listen to this show. As ever, if you are enjoying the podcast, then please do give it a like, give it a review. We have hit a couple of milestones recently. We've got 50 five-star reviews on Spotify, which I'm super grateful for, and also reached the 50,000 downloads mark last week. That is 50K. That is an ultra marathon of downloads. So thank you to everyone who has been listening, whether you're new to the podcast or you've been listening since the beginning. It really means a lot. Okay, that is enough waffle from me. I hope you enjoy this conversation with Joe Turner. Well, Joe Turner, welcome back to Feet First. Good to have you on.
Yeah, it's good to be back. Good to speak to you again.
Yeah, and congratulations on your course record running at Chiltern Wonderland 50. Your legs, did you mention you were at the gym this morning already?
Yeah, I actually ran on the Sunday as well afterwards. Did 10K the day after, then did 9 miles, did 10 miles yesterday, did the gym again this morning. I'll run after this. So it's just been pretty good recovery, to be honest. I don't want to be honest, people, it's like, oh, it wasn't flat out or wasn't, trying hard or whatever, it was, a solid run out, and, running for 6 hours is going to affect your muscles, but, it wasn't by any means, 100% full gas kind of effort. So that I could recover, because there's more kind of things on the calendar.
That'd be interesting to get into a bit of that, because, I mean, you've had quite the year, at least in trail running terms. I mean, we last spoke when you won the 100 Hills 50K. You came on with Carla Borland, and then a few months after that, you towed the line at South Downs Way 100, which I guess fair to say, didn't go to plan.
Yeah, the Robbie Britton curse of the pre-race pick. But it's, you know, it's been an up and down year. Black Canyon obviously went badly, and then
of course, yeah.
And if that didn't go badly, I wouldn't have even done 100 Hills, and then kind of, I guess, similar thing happened with South Downs 100 and then the Race of the Stones, which I saw you at. But it's one of those things where the kind of the A race goals haven't been going quite as well as maybe the B race goals. I don't know if it's mental. I mean, Black Canyon, I fell over, so that probably wasn't a mental thing. South Downs Way, I think the main thing that went wrong there, and what I tried, I mean, talk about it more for the Ridgeway and also for this one, is fluid intake. I think as I was listening to James Elson's Centurion podcast this afternoon, and he's saying how he saw me in the first half of the Chilton Wonderland, and I looked very warm. I think he said I had a bucket of water. It looked like I had a bucket of water dropped over my head. So it was humid, and it was kind of, I know I sweat quite a lot. So it's, I think South Downs Way probably cramping hamstrings, like significant cramping, so I couldn't run, was unfortunate. I don't think it was related to the pace. I'll stand by that. I think I got my pacing sort of okay, you know. But, Mark's an absolute beast at 100 miles, and then Hugh as well has become on so much as well. So it was a, it's been an interesting year, let's say.
Yeah, I mean, I had you as my pick actually for in the podium. I wasn't sure where you were going to come, and I think, as you say, you were definitely on track for that. Were you able to take away any positives from that experience?
Yeah, I mean, I knew I was fit. I knew the training had gone pretty well. Maybe I was slightly overcooked. If anything, I had a really good. My wife loves to go to a place called La Santa in Lanzarote, and it's great for anyone if you know you've got a significant other who may or may not love running as much as you do. I was like kind of smashing the hills and stuff there in May, and felt quite good to go. As I say, from the South Downs one, I did a 50k on the South Downs in the lead up to it, and felt, you know, like I was kind of jogging most of it. And I think one thing it has taught me is that for now I'm just going to stay away from the 100 milers, which try and test that aerobic system. You know, I've got the marathoning background, I've got the track background. I like that sort of pain maybe a bit more than the getting through the depleted muscles pain.
Yeah, the dull ache.
Yeah, exactly, which sounds like the common theme for 100 miles. Maybe I'm just a bit weak, mentally as well as as physically for that.
I don't know about that. I mean, are you ever intrigued by races like Western States, which do have this reputation as really fast? I mean, I guess South Downs Way now is technically faster, but more athletic races.
I think Western States is always what brings that desire for the 100 miler, I think. It's more of a draw to me than like UTMB, for example. I listened to your podcast the other day, and saying how, you know, you can train for a mountain race in Cambridge or whatever, because I always say you can't. And while you can, it means that you would probably hate running for those months, because you'd be constantly going to the gym on the treadmill or finding the one hill and going up and down it, which, I want to enjoy my hobby. Western States is that huge draw, right? I mean, everyone wants to do it without maybe thinking about just how difficult it is, because it definitely, you know, I'm sure you know because you got enough one ticket, right? So, you know, everyone knows how difficult, anyone who's done it knows how difficult that race must be. You look at, like, you know, trail running in the media now, you know, if you listen to Free Tap Trail, you listen to Boulder Boy, you know, all these podcasts that are like, you know, super, you know, quite fun, and they build this massive hype up for Western States. Like, I want to be a part of that. Maybe without sometimes thinking, but then you actually have to run 100 miles. So it's it'd be good to, you know, it's good to see ultra running growing in the UK, I think, so we can kind of create our own narratives around the field, you know, both men's and women's. There's loads of great athletes around, and being able to, you know, hype it up in other ways rather than just the boring not boring because it's not boring, you know, Western States and UTMB, but actually totally, having other things around as well.
Yeah, I mean, I feel obliged to cover those races insofar as I can, but they're probably the ones I'm least interested in from a media perspective because the stories are being told by so many people, whereas we have, at the time of recording, haven't published it, but just spoke to Hugh Chatfield and Keith Wigley ahead of the world champs, and like that's just like a super interesting race to me because it's just, yes, it's big and competitive, but it's completely bizarre in terms of the course and everything.
Yeah, that course is very much not one I was never going to be interested in trying to go on that one, it sounds. I was pretty good that Mark didn't go for it, actually. I'd have loved to see Mark first of all get a British vest of his own, but then also like on that super challenging and technical course.
Yeah, I think he'd do really well, actually. A quick break to thank the Centurion Ultra Running Store for supporting Feet First. I mentioned them earlier, guys, but the Centurion Ultra Running Store are the go-to retailer when it comes to ultra running everything, really, from nutrition to bags, packs, shoes, whatever you need, they've got it. Everything they stock has been vetted and checked and tested by a team of experts, including founder James Elson, who is a bit of a local legend here in the UK. They've just taken stock of a new nutrition brand, which I'm really looking forward to trying. This is 226ers. This is a range of nutrition products that I hadn't heard of before, but I'm really excited to try. They have a high fructose gel, a standard performance energy gel with 55 grams of carbohydrates per gel. That is absolutely bonkers. Very exciting. They also have sugar-free electrolytes, all the things you need really to get through a run. And I think what I like about the Centurion Ultra Running Store is the fact that they have these different brands. They introduce different products to their range all the time that they have been testing and tinkering with. And it gives us as runners, I guess, a chance to try new things. You know, we don't need to stick with a standard product. Yes, if it works for you, that's great. But in the off season, as we move into the winter months, maybe try something a bit different. I'm going to be certainly trying this new 226ers high fructose gel, 55 grams. I can't get over that. If you want to check out the Centurion Ultra Running Store, then head to the link in the show notes. It is centurionultrarunningstore.com. It's pretty straightforward. And you can use the code FEETFIRST10. That will get you 10% off any purchase, including a high fructose 55 gram gel. It will also help support the podcast and an independent ultra running retailer. That's centurionultrarunningstore.com and use the code FEETFIRST10. All right, on with the show. Well, perhaps a course that you are more suited to was Race to the Stones, where we had a little chat before and after. Yeah. It's funny, actually. I feel like if South Downs Way is becoming the UK's Western States, there's a kind of a sense in which Race to the Stones could be the Black Canyon's 100K. It's flat, it's fast, about the same amount of elevation. And this year, it was extremely hot. So how did that affect your race?
Well,
as a lover of heat?
What I ran of Race to the Stones was hotter than... I mean, I ran all of Race to the Stones, so that was good. Than what I ran of Black Canyon, it was hotter. Right. It was also... At times, it felt hotter than it did in the 100K World Champs that was out in India. So it was a hot...
Yeah,
hot
we saw
day.
Some... I think the official reading was 35, but some people clocked 37 on their personal devices.
Yeah, and... that was very much, you know, I said, I think, well, obviously we've learned from, you know, the advancement in the sport from watching the Western States live feed is the use of ice, right? Mm-hmm. And I think everyone is now doing this, you know, heat training, pre-cooling, icing kind of thing. And, you know, I started Race to the Stones with like frozen bottles in my hydration pack.
Yeah.
So that's like, you know, one cool thing and cooling thing. And then, you know, I had my mum crewing at different points, and so then we went through, yeah, like three bags of ice and during the day just to top up the ice band down there, keep going. Because, you needed to, essentially.
I mean, your duel with Hugh Tibbs, who eventually ran the course record, for me, that just will go down as one of the unsung great battles of the sport. It was so epic to see. When did he pulled away from you towards the second half?
Yeah, I mean... I'd have loved to have made it a bit more of a duel to kind of come back, sort of a bit more passing of the lead or whatever. What really happened was that I stopped to get ice at kind of, well, it must have been like 30 something K, maybe something like that.
Yeah.
And Hugh got the gap, and kind of then it sort of pretty much stayed like that. And then I had a couple of rough patches in that race. I'm sure that he did as well, but that kind of like couldn't quite get it back. And
yeah.
I was actually really happy with the performance that day, and it was one that I think I needed after South Downs Way, because although I didn't win, you know, you obviously want to go out and win, but actually getting through some pretty low points is something that I think we can all sometimes, makes us better athletes, runners, whatever, when you know the A goal is probably gone. Like, I didn't think I was going to catch him, you know, by certain points. But actually still putting in a solid performance rather than just kind of, you know, throwing in the towel. And while there's times to do that, like, you know, because you see it more in the pros now, right? That they do drop out. Yeah. And because you can either, you're not there to just finish, if that's, and that's not putting down anyone that is there to just finish. That's, you know, that's a completely amazing achievement. It's more that, like, you know, you want to compete at the front end. And so if you have got, you know, a decent injury, you know, like, you know, and you can't actually, like, run, I could, like, you know, hobble, for example, at the South Downs. If I do that for, you know, the last 60K, I'll finish, but then there's no way I'd be running properly now because I'd probably taken so long to recover because the damage would have been so great. So it's, you kind of got to weigh things up in your mind at the time. And that's why you see more pros dropping out nowadays as well, because they think today is gone, but I'll be able to have another shot in a month or so. So it's but actually, you know, finishing a race that hasn't gone quite to plan is super helpful for building that mental strength in the future.
Yeah, and worth saying, you ran the third fastest time ever on one of the hottest days ever, and that's a race with many thousands of finishers. So yeah, you must have taken some positives from that, I'm sure, as well.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, and you know, it's it's good to get to know Hugh, and, you know, like, you know, sent messages before, sent messages after, followed the progress, you know, Mark sent messages, you know, it's kind of quite a good little, like, community to be a part of, and it's good to see, you know, Hugh do well as well. I'm looking forward to Autumn 100, right, because Hugh's running, Callum Pritchard's running, David Green's back, so, you know, it's all these kind of sub, like, stories almost that are going on, once you start to actually get to know some people a bit more personally. You know, and I know Julia Davis, who obviously ran the women's course record from my time from the 100K team in India, and it's great to see, you know, her going in that. Sarah Webbs is running in the 24-hour championships coming up. So, you know, it's like, it's a pretty small community, and once you start to get to know the storylines, there's loads of stuff going on.
Totally. Yeah, it used to feel like there was a couple of headline races here in the UK, but I think maybe it's just from getting to know the scene a bit more, but it feels like the stories continue well into autumn, and then before you know it, it'll be spine season again, and we'll do the whole thing again.
Oh man, spine, yeah, no chance. But it's a small world, actually. My wife's colleague brother won the spine challenger north on one of them anyway. Yeah, and I was like, oh, who's this guy? And it's like, oh yeah. It's just one of those small worlds. Similarly, like, one of my old colleagues went to school with Ollie Garrod, who was on the England team with me, like, a while ago. So it's one of those weird things. But yeah. And you also raced the stones. I don't know what you guys paid UTMB, but the index we got off that was pretty solid.
Yeah, do you know what? I just chatted about this with Hugh and Keith a little bit. I mentioned you because you had this crazy high. Was it like 8:30 or...? 8:40.
I don't think it was quite 8:30, but it was high. Yeah, it was over 800. And
I think they must take factors like your competitors into account. They say they don't. Well, ITRA say they don't. I don't know if your ITRA score was skewed, but
I hard to admit I don't pay for the ITRA bit to get the actual access to the actual score.
But apparently UTMB take those things. So maybe Hugh being there and having run such a solid race at South Downs 100, maybe that skewed your result? I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, to be honest, I feel like, you know, those indexes, and, you know, I saw Tom Jolly's post a while ago about things changing, even if, like, you run the same race, but you run it faster and it goes down and all these things. And it does have, you know, you said it does have implications, because if you get a certain threshold score, then you get free entry into some of the UTMB world events. So it does have some impact.
And also, then, they have to mathematically, 1,000 is the upper limit, right? So as people improve, they must have to bring it down, as they'll inevitably get closer to 1,000. And you couldn't have someone score 1,000, because then you'd be claiming no one could ever run faster.
Perfect
than
race, yeah. Yeah. Yeah, it's a, it's a strange, right? Because then equally, like, you know, with races, like, you know, I used a few 50Ks as kind of prep for South Downs Way, and they're obviously going to be lower scores than what you feasibly could get, but because they're then on your profile, do they impact your? I don't know how all the algorithms work. It's but you know, it's these sorts of consider. It almost puts you off.
Yeah.
Racing in a way, but anyway, I don't.
And it would put you off, like running with a partner, for instance, or running with a friend, because you're going to get a lower score.
I think you can delete them though off your profile, maybe, but because I've got a couple of pretty poor results, but why delete them? You got to keep them on there to remind you of the bad times. But
Well, let's talk about Chilton Wonderland 50 then. I guess my open question is like, why this race? What drew you to take this one on? Because you spent a lot of time in the Chilterns this year.
I've spent a lot of time in the Chilterns, partly because they're beautiful. You know, it's really nice, non-technical running, let's say. But you get those kind of, you know, nice climbs, nice descents without kind of worrying too much about, you know, footing and feet and sort of things. So it's also commutable, if that's the word, from Cambridge. So I can actually get out there and there and back in the day. So it's a... it's quite nice to, you know, have that motivation rather than just going to drive somewhere to train, but actually, you know, okay, let's do a race at the same time. On the Chilterns, why the Chilterns, Wonderland 50? I think I must have entered it, like, maybe definitely within the week after South Downs Way 100 dropping out, because I'm like, I'm going to go back to a Centurion event and I'm going to perform well, because you know, I want to show James that I can do it. But yeah, I did enter it pretty soon after, because I'm like, look, okay, I want something to target around that sort of time. Because the other thing that I did was after Southland's Way 100 was I was initially signed up to the 100 miler in the Kulamanen races, UTMB race out in Sweden. I emailed that organizer and said, can I drop down to the 56k one, please? And so, so kind of with quite a big pivot in the year, just to be like, okay, you know, I want to do a couple more races, see the year out, but then I want the big one to be like a fast sort of 50k effort and see how I go there. Cause I haven't really had a, you know, 100 hills was a pretty solid effort, but I'd like to kind of do it again. But, anyway, yeah, I get kind of distracted. So,
When is Kulamanen then? That's later.
So end of October. Yeah.
That's so quite a flat sort of coastal race, isn't it?
It's like the flattest of the UTMB races. So, we can, obviously, there's a reason why I'm going for that one rather than the Arc 25. Rather than you know, some of those you know, the mountainous ones. I'm also doing the Arc 25 as well at the start of next year. The 50 is absolutely stacked, so I was like, oh, I'll go for the 25. also looking at the ACP next year, so I didn't want anything too big in January.
Well, it's interesting actually. Like, you've run a variety of distances this year. Like, your headline race is 50k. Well, 100k. Black Canyon 50k, 100 miles, 100k, 50 miles. Like, where does 50 miles sit for you? Where do you feel like your specialism lies?
I mean, I think the specialism, my best event is probably 100k on the road. Right. And so where that kind of sits is sort of probably around the 50 mile mark on a runnable trail kind of area. Yeah. That's sort of six and a half hours of running I seem to do quite well at. And this year, because there isn't a world or European 100k champs on the road, because the trail world champs are somewhere so technical that I was never going to be competitive in any sort of way. It's kind of like a year to have a bit of a free hit at things. Obviously, South Downs Way 100 was the main target. That was what it was like, okay, look, let's structure the first half of the year to go after that. But everything else is kind of like... hey, you know, let's try and have a bit of fun to some extent, like try and have lower pressure, which is probably why the lower pressure ones have gone quite well. And yeah, just try a few races out, right? Get to see a bit more of the country. It's kind of what we want to, what we all want to do, right? Get outside, just run, right? It's something very refreshing, especially in like a race where you can run with, you know, just your pack, or, you know, sometimes even with just like a belt or whatever. And, you know, you see the aid stations, you know, like say a little volunteers get you water and just carry on, and it's kind of like minimal effort, which is quite refreshing.
Or perhaps on that, maybe you could, for people who aren't familiar, just briefly introduce the course at Chilton Wonderland, because I did run it 4 years ago and I remember really enjoying it. It's a very aesthetic, like it's a very well-designed, crafted experience, right?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, so you start on like the Thames Path, which is great. I think I dropped a couple of like four minute Ks at the start just to get a bit of a gap. But you know, it's, you know, super runnable. And then you start, you know, like the first quarter is quite flat-ish. It's not too hilly, and so you can, you know, make some fairly good time, but obviously don't go off too fast. Then you start to get into some more of like, you know, some of the hills where, you know, some of them are like open. I think they'd cut all the corn down, right? Because I think some of the like the preview photos and things, you know, the, you know, running through fields of wheat, Theresa May style or whatever. then there's also like these kind of like nice woodland trails, some single track, some more kind of that, the type of running that I love, right? Where it's kind of like a wider trail through like the woods or the air, like wooded areas and things. It's just, yeah, super nice. And because of the weather we've had, you know, because it was so hot over summer, even though it has rained a bit, it was just like perfect trail. And, you know, so you know, there's a few bigger climbs. There's a really horrible slash nice with the windmill.
Yes, I remember this.
Is in Chitty Chitty Bang Bang, maybe?
Yeah. Is that like Ibstone somewhere?
Yes. Yeah. And yeah, it's got a really horrible climb super and descent. Steep. Yes, it's super steep. But you know, nice to admire the scenery.
It's sort of punctuation on the course. Like you need something like that to break it up.
Yeah, exactly. And you know, then I think the third quarter is probably the most challenging one, because I got to like the halfway-ish sort of point. I think it's like the marathon split or something, and I thought I was making pretty good time, but then listening to James afterwards, I was actually quite significantly like over the course record. I think I was 5 minutes kind of slower than the course record split or whatever of the day. But I thought I was doing a great job because I was like way under the average pace, and I'm like, you know, just having a good day out. So I didn't worry about it, which was probably good, because you probably do lose a bit of time. There's a few more climbs, you know, a few slightly longer ones. Then there's a lot of running in the last quarter of the course where, and I said this to James afterwards, like Grimm's Ditch, because you run along a bit of the Ridgeway, right? You go through Grimm's Ditch. And I said to you beforehand, I hate running through there. I don't know why. It's one of those trails where you feel like you should be running faster, and then you look at the splits and it's like, I don't know, 10-15 seconds slower.
It's a weird one, right? Because on the map, it's literally a straight line because it's like a prehistoric monument. Yeah. But it's a straight line that doesn't conform with the elevation, so it sort of just wobbles up and down.
Exactly. And then rather than following the Ridgeway too, you do like some nice bits of the Ridgeway actually before you get into Grimm's Ditch as well. You know, there's kind of some of those nice climbs. You go over the golf course, you know, avoid the golf, avoid all the golfers out at that time. But then rather than heading straight along the Ridgeway into Goring itself, you kind of do this extra like wiggly bit, which is actually nicer, you know, because the Goring bit at the Ridgeway is a bit, you know, a bit flat, you're next to the river sort of thing. Which, you know, is obviously good, maybe good for running, but actually kind of doing some of the kind of, you know, twists around to have a few more hills in, you know, some nice descents. And then the last 3K or so is pretty much a slow descent into Goring, so you can really probably, if your quads aren't dead, you can probably take some quite significant time.
I remember that long downhill. You mentioned you were sort of slightly behind the course record, so that was something that you were aware of, was it, the course record and your potential to go for it?
I was aware of the potential of the course record. I think, you know,
it was John Ellis's record from 2020.
Yeah, because it was like 6:22, and beforehand I was like, oh, what average K pace is that? And it's like 4:45s. And I was like, you know, based on nothing, no detailed analysis. It was more just a kind of finger in the air. That's the elevation. If the trails are good, can I run that? Possibly. but there was no like, on the day, I wasn't really tracking it too much until the last like 20k maybe, where I don't know if you do this mental maths, but it's like I was like, oh, if I do the last 20k at 5 minute k pace, will I break the course record? And I was like, oh yeah, I can do this. And it's like, and so from then it's like, you know, it's like, oh, I can definitely do that. And just to kind of keep yourself a bit you know, keep yourself going, because
I mean, I've never done that mental math with regards to a course record, but I've done it. I know what you mean.
Yeah, I mean, you know, any target time could be cut off. Could be any sort of, whether you're looking at, you know, breaking 6 hours or breaking 10 hours, you know, for sort of event, it's all kind of you know, it's all relative. That's the great thing about running and trail running, right? Is that everyone can do it, and you can have your own A, B, C goals, etc., and it's for everyone. Like,
it's funny. I've heard. I can't remember where I heard this, but someone was saying that, you know, your brain as an organ, it uses a lot of energy, and the more you think, the more energy it uses. And so someone was sort of saying you shouldn't do mental maths, because the more you're doing mental maths, the more energy your brain is using. Like, you should just not think, which maybe is applicable if you're really digging deep, but it sounds like you weren't having to dig that deep to achieve this.
It was one of those things. I've been having some like back issues in the lead up to it for like the couple of weeks. I did a really like small scale like local race. It was near Chelmsford. I did a 10k that started literally outside my door. That's quite fun. I live in like a sort of new build estate outside of Cambridge, so it's quite nice when there's actually an event on to kind of go and do it. So I try and support that. But it's like a 15 mile like trail race called called the Muntjac 15 Trail Boss Events. If you're in Essex, go and they do a couple of races, and it was really fun. It was, you know, bare bones stuff, and it cost me £14. I entered the day before because he snuck me in because he had some dropouts, and just turned up, ran, my back was a bit like, oh, you know, kind of on the foam roller sort of thing, trying to sort it out. So when I started, I was like, oh, like, you know, I probably wouldn't advise going into a 50-mile race to try and sort you back out, but actually since then it's been perfect. So it's been a weird one. But that kind of meant that I kind of went in thinking, I can't push too hard, especially in the first half, even first 60K, just because I want to make sure I get to the end of this one. I didn't want to, you know, you only get a certain amount of, like, you know, bullets per year in terms of really targeting and going to the well. And so one is try and not peak too early for things like, you know, Coolamon and et cetera, by keeping a bit back. Kind of never being in the sort of danger zone. I looked, you know, the heart rate data afterwards, and this is risk-based, so it's always a bit rough, but you know, my heart rate average is like under 140, and except for that windmill climb where it peaks at like the 150s or something. Just to
that's
show
still
that
amazingly low. I mean, how old are you? Like what, 30 something?
I am 35. I am. V35 on my Power of 10 profile, which I don't check too much anymore. But that was a shock to not be senior anymore.
There's a shallow victory to win the V35 category. Isn't it?
Yeah,
but it's just that's really surprisingly low. I thought you were going to say it was sort of in the 150s, but that's really exceptionally low.
I mean, my heart rate is a bit lower. Like my max heart rate, I struggle to ever get to like 180. So kind of, you know, if it's not like I can't hit 200 beats per minute. If I hit that, I'd probably be dying. So it's I don't have a crazy high like max out, so it's probably just a bit lower.
Okay.
But anyway.
You had a lead kind of pretty much from the off. It was a couple of minutes at the first aid station, 20 minutes at the end. So not a non-competitive race, because second place was still a fast time, but you didn't really have to worry about them catching you. Do you enjoy that style of racing, or would you have preferred to have someone up there pushing you?
It made it less stressful in terms of I didn't really want to push too hard. Because it goes both ways, right? Like South Downs Way 100 was so fun for like the first 30-40 miles, because there was like a huge group of us just like chatting away kind of thing. And that sort of, you know, you say don't think too much or whatever, but you know, you're just talking about rubbish, enjoying the day out sort of thing, you know, thinking, oh, there's this guy that's gone, he's got a 20 minute lead on us, but we're going to catch him sort of thing. And you know, And similarly, like, you know, when running with you at the start of Race to Stones, it's sometimes good to just chat, you know, get to know people, talk about ultra running, because, you know, obviously you get to do it a lot through, you know,
main
through
reason
this.
I started the podcast, yeah.
But you know, actually, like, opportunities to talk about, especially ultra running, especially kind of the, you know, the niche parts of, you know, the elite GB and women's scene across the UK, you know, and like, you know, talking about, or like, you know, slightly more obscure races, and I say obscure as in like not UTMB or Western States, because the guys that I, you know, train with at the club just aren't interested or whatever. So it's, you know, it's sometimes fun to just chat about that stuff, to be honest. Yeah. But then, you know, but then you also have that kind of like, okay, I've got to, you know, it makes it easier from a case, especially if there's like a steep uphill and maybe you want to keep your heart rate a bit lower and you want to like hike for a little bit rather than run all the way to the top. If you're with someone, you almost are certainly going to run, run the whole way and like spike your heart rate. That's one thing actually, the Cheltenham Way 50 is that the aid stations seem to constantly be at the top of hills.
Yeah.
And there was one where you could see it from quite a long way back, and I'm just like, oh, well, I'm gonna stop in a minute anyway, so I've gotta keep running, running, and get there just like completely out of breath. But
there's like a volunteer at the top, just like staring at you for like 10 minutes.
But like, so, but I also do enjoy, you know, there's something quite refreshing, and it's about being on your own in the trails, right? And you know, I realize that's a pretty privileged position when you're at the front, and obviously, you know, middle of the pack maybe less, you know, you don't always get that. And you look at things from like UTMB, right, where they're queuing to get up a mountain, it's like, oh man. But, you know, just kind of being there outside, which sounds, you know, a bit lame or whatever, but it's quite nice to sometimes
have it. We talked a bit about it before, I'm injured at the moment, but Cheltenham Oneland is exactly the kind of race that when I'm injured, I dream about, because it's like, it's relatively low key, but it's still like really beautiful, really well delivered. People take it seriously, and it sounds like a beautiful day out as well. The conditions
and
wise.
I think, you know, what we want to keep seeing is UK races getting more competitive. And so, you know, me and Julia's a better athlete than I am. Like, so it's,
yeah, I need to get her on as well.
Yeah, definitely. You know, and getting, you know, we want to see more competitive races, right? And it's just you know, you look at the Athletics World Champs, you know, the amount of upsets, sprint finishes, etc., like racing, it's super exciting, right? And I'm not saying that ultra running is maybe ever gonna get to that sort of stage, but you know, just kind of, you know, improving the standard is you know, you see what, you know, Centurion are doing with like World Trail Majors and things like that, trying to create hype around races rather than just the kind of you know, same old sort of races in the past. People probably want to, you know, those that dot watch or whatever probably want to see a close contest.
Yeah, for sure. You've raced a lot on the roads in the past. You talked about it earlier, and you've represented GB. Where do you sit at the moment in regards to like the trails versus road dichotomy? Has this year of more trail whetted your appetite to continue in future?
Yeah, definitely. I think it's, you know, I want to hopefully do OCC next year. That's where I've got a couple of bites at the automatic qualifying cherry, with Coolamanen and with the Arc 25. I think it's top three gets you automatic entry.
I think that's right. I don't know if the Arc would get it for 26 though. Would that be because the race itself is in 26?
Yeah, maybe not. It's so maybe I've got one bite for next year and then another bite for the afterwards. But then there's also the lottery as well, right? So you can still get in. I was actually unsuccessful last year, so it's you know, it's just one of those things. So you know, there's still trail races I want to do. The 100 miles will be there in my head until I do get it right, maybe. And Western States is obviously, you know, a part of that. But then, you know, there's equally going back to the roads is also, you know, I'm waiting hopefully to see where the World 100K Champs will be next year. And maybe they'll announce that after the World Trail Champs. But because, I want to go back to the ACP next year, Anglo-Celtic Plate. For those that may or may not be aware, it's, you know, again, becoming a higher standard of event, especially when there's GB vests on the line, as you can imagine.
Yeah.
Like the trial for India was pretty, you know, pretty stacked. Gets more and more people each time. So, and you know, there's obviously, I still haven't done London Marathon. I haven't done, you know, Boston Marathon, New York Marathon, Tokyo Marathon. So it's, yeah, I definitely have to do London at some point. Whether I wait till I know I'm not going to get a PB and do it then, or is that's more enjoyable. But
yeah, I was going to ask, like, I mean, we all put this pressure on ourselves, but as someone who is in that elite category, at least at certain distances, do you get sort of performance anxiety when you're doing other races that perhaps are more like bucket list events that you just want to complete?
Yeah, I think trying to enjoy races has been a bit of a focus this year especially as well, and just trying to take it a bit less seriously, because if you're not actually, not like the whole like training, and you know, you obviously, you know, you train, you get, you do the work, all the hard work and things, that's like, you know, that's still there, but actually being a bit more just relaxed around it as well. I don't really get performance anxiety as such. I mean, you get, you know, pre-race nerves and things like that, but I know some people who really struggle, you know, with things like that, and that's never been too much of an issue. I think, you know, I joked about it with regards to the A race is going badly. I think it was more just you know, Black Canyon was a freak accident, and then Southtown's Way was a probable hydration thing, which I've, you know, worked on and then had good success in the past two races where it's been quite warm. So it's the thing that I find that I really find liberating about the ultra distance compared to marathon is that this idea of marathon pace in workout, and you know, workout, sorry, very American, in sessions is just gone. And I still sometimes find myself thinking, oh, if I'm doing like, you know, threshold like reps and things, like, oh, you know, how does this compare to like marathon pace or whatever? But actually, you know, that concept of marathon pace, or what I've run for marathons in the past, or was probably capable at some point, is, you know, you were fresh on race day, you were carb loaded, you were all ready to go, and you know, you have that adrenaline. You know, I ran my PB in Valencia, which has, you know, made all other marathons obsolete in terms of going for a fast marathon time. So it's, you know, it's hard to then kind of compare it, you know, if you're struggling to hit that for, you know, a 10-minute rep or something, then you can't beat yourself up, because you might be really, you know, really fatigued because you've done, you know, a 50-mile week or 100-mile week, you know, leading up to it. So actually hitting marathon pace is a lot more difficult. And, you know, it feels, you know, people always, oh, marathon pace should feel easy, but actually it shouldn't feel that easy most of the time, because you're pretty tired. Yeah, exactly. So, yeah, I think that's the thing that I've enjoyed most about the ultra running element. You know, but going, doing a few more marathons would be fun in the future as well, as kind of, but I'm very much not as competitive at the marathon distance, because as you can imagine. Yeah.
It's a different kettle of fish, isn't it? It's funny, I spoke to Fee Pascal after she ran Western States this year, and I think she found herself in the position of, you know, this is potentially a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity, let's not ruin it by going out too hard, and ended up having a phenomenal race, you know, finishing in the top five, picking people off. And it feels as though there's a parallel there. I don't want to speak for you, but in terms of, you know, running this race, Chilton Wonderland, not worrying too much about it and actually having a really solid performance. So is that something you're kind of taking with you in future, do you think? That low pressure?
Absolutely. And I think it's what we all want to do. Yeah. I think the key thing as well is also about just not worrying about anyone else, or like, you know, and in this case, even worrying about, like, you know, the ghost of John Ellis running his splits or whatever. Because at Black Canyon, I definitely went off too fast, which, you know, does that fatigue then mean you fall over? But I know I did, because I was in like 40th place and we're running like, you know, 335 Ks for the first couple of Ks. And you just like, I know this is too fast. And so you kind of, everything that you know about, like, that you sensibly know, you're like, God, I just need to run my own race. Like, I don't need to worry about anyone else. Like, because you look at the finishes of Black Canyon, the finishes of Western States, well, right? Like, the Japanese guy that came 10th at Western States, like, he was just, you know, it was the one, right, because it was like he'd come through just before all the lead women at the start, and so he got quite a lot of like airtime. He was just making his own way through, right, and had an outstanding run. You get top 10 at Western States in that field, is incredible, right? And so just, and you see it all the time. The women are better than men because we all get a bit need to like showboat a bit more.
That
probably
ego train, the going through.
And it's like, so, but actually, just like, just forgetting about everyone else, just running comfortably, and that's, you know, like not overdoing the start, because, like, you know, James Simmons' podcast, you know, I was, you know, 5 minutes behind, and it's like, oh well, there's probably not, you know, there might not be a course record now, because, you know, is he going to make the time up? Because I paced it pretty well.
Yeah.
Actually, the amount of time you can make back in those back halves of races, where especially imagine 100 miles, right, where everyone is completely falling apart.
Totally, yeah. I guess you just do the maths on it, right? Like, you're going to slow down, you're going to be running slower splits at the end, but how much can you improve those early kilometers? Can you bring, you can't bring a 4 minute kilometer down to a 2 minute kilometer, but at the end, you can bring a 6 minute kilometer down to a 5 minute kilometer, and you're making up so much time.
And actually, the whole, you almost shouldn't slow down, to be honest. Like, you know, we try and pace marathons evenly on negative split. In the 100K, when I ran my PB with James and Dougie, we all negative split that race. I think Chris did as well, he was in fourth. We all ran negative splits, and that's obviously, you know, the elevation is the same at the first half and the back half. Yeah. But there's plenty of trail races, I imagine, where the elevation is more significant in the start. And because, you know, I listened to what James was talking about in the preview for Chilton Wonderland, saying there's a lot of running in that last, you know, quarter of the race. So if you save yourself for that and can really, you know, then have a good run at it, that's the way you're going to finish faster in some of these races. It's always a tricky balance, though, especially when you've got that adrenaline at a big start line as well. It's maybe a bit easier when it's a lower profile kind of thing, but I mean, the same thing happened in India as well, where us GB guys, we pretty much ran together, and we were in like 50th place ish for the first few laps, and then we went to the 40s, 30s, 20s, and then we finished like 5th, 7th, 9th, 11th, and 15th. Like, you know, it's kind of like, just like the amount of time you can make up in these races is crazy. What we always sometimes forget about that.
Yeah, for sure. Oh, kudos to you, Joe. I'm super stoked for you. I mean, it feels like, not that you need a redemption, but there's like a redemptive quality to this run, right?
Yeah, it's one of those things. It's certainly easier to enjoy running when you've had a good result. Yeah. I'm sure that goes for anyone, and it doesn't have to be winning a race. It can be just, you know, just achieving your goal, saying a PB, finishing a race. It's, you know, when you drop out, it's, you know, you know I'm there like thinking, oh, you know, I'm never gonna do this again, I'm never gonna ask you guys to crew for me, I feel so bad, because with ultra running, right, it's a team sport. It's just you anymore. It's not like I, you know, went down to London to run London Marathon, dropped out and got a train back home without really like affecting anyone. You know, there's, you know, I'm lucky to have people in my life who will embrace this silly little hobby, and you know, my wife and my mum and her partner will come and support. And so when you don't perform, you feel like you've let them down as well, and they obviously, you know, this, you know, and you haven't, kind of thing. So it's this it's good to, you know, think to get a good result, because totally, it just gives you that motivation for your next race. You know, like you won the 50k at the Ridgeway yourself, I'm sure you're on like a massive high after that, and it sucks you got an injury, because otherwise that taking that momentum into the next sort of race is, you know, just makes running more fun.
Yeah, I mean, I was chuffed with that performance, but I did have to take it with a pinch of salt, because you literally ran the same 50k the day before faster.
Yeah.
with a 50k already in your legs.
No need to compare, though.
It's the thief of joy.
Yeah.
But it's about to your point, it's really not about the time or the place, it's about the execution, and it sounds like the race you just had was really well executed.
Yeah, and I think it also does link to enjoyment as well. Like, I had a really good time out there. Actually, you know, that's... one of the ultras I've done, I had no bad points actually at any point. I just had my music on and in my headphones and just ran through the trails, and it was so I think there's definitely something to be had with the whole enjoyment, not trying to think too much kind of thing.
I think it's viewing races as that opportunity to really have that run, not that race, that run that you want to have where everything comes together and you flow for X hours. You couldn't do that on your own, or you could, but you'd have to figure out logistics and food and water and stuff. Like, everything's set up there for you to just go and have the perfect run and let the chips fall where they may.
Yeah, exactly. And the enthusiasm of all the volunteers and things at these events is always great. And, you see familiar faces, at the start or whatever, especially if you're doing, events through the same teams, and it's good to, see you at the start of the race for the Stones. You see runners that you know, and it's this kind of little, community now that we live in. It's good to, just be a part of that, especially with all the political nonsense that's going on, right? You can just sort of forget about it and just run, right?
Yeah, exactly. Nice one. Well, best of luck at Coolamanen and at the Arc as well. I hope to be down at the Arc, so hopefully we can check in beforehand. I won't be running. I'm curing my friend, rubbing my friend's feet. My closing question is just, and we kind of touched on it, I think, but what do you think is the most important thing that you did right in this race?
If we're getting technical, it'd probably be hydration. Yeah. I made sure to, I think I filled both bottles up at every aid station. And so kind of having that full liter of fluid per hour, especially because it started so humid, at the start. So that was obviously a potential success. I'm pretty good on the fueling, as we talked about last time. But then, I think actually, going in thinking, oh, is my back going to be okay? Probably meant I didn't run too fast at the start, and that probably meant I paced it better. So it's a couple of things circumstantial, a couple of things I thought a bit more about, especially with the fluids and getting the electrolyte. So I'd have one water and one precision, because Centurion are good. I think they have precision hydration on the course, so it's super helpful.
Yeah. We didn't even touch on your carb intake. Did you manage 120 still?
I had, so what was it, 90? I lost track of the number of the single 30 gels that I had, but I must have had about, I probably had over 700 grams of carbs, so that would probably be around the 100 grams an hour. So, nice. Yeah.
It's probably why you recovered so quickly.
I mean, that's the thing, right? I think actually the carbs as well as fluids.
Yeah.
I think people sometimes maybe forget about the fluid, or it's not talked about as much, but having that actually helps with recovery as well. So, because it's the one where my back sort of flared up, I was definitely dehydrated at the end of, because it was hot and I had no water for the whole race. So it's there's definitely a lot in that for those who are putting the miles in and making sure you recover properly.
Nice one, Joe Turner, thanks so much.
Cheers, Ed.